If you love Survivor and you're feeling down, David Bloomberg will turn it around. He'll break down the rules and he'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. This is why Blank lost.
Oh baby, this is why Blank lost. Hello and welcome back to our weekly discussion about why each player was voted out of Survivor. I'm David Bloomberg, and joining me as always is the woman who can definitely tell the difference between a rock and an octopus, Jessica Lewis.
Hello, David Bloomberg. That was a great intro yet again. You're so good at those. I think it's fantastic.
Well, yeah, we'll see how many, you know, jokes I can make about a rock before you finally get sick of them.
That's a good one. That's a good place to start. I like that.
Okay. So before we get started, you were on Andrea's People TV Survivor fan forum this week. Do you have any good stories to tell?
I was on. It was fantastic. This is the second opportunity I had to be on Andrea's fan forum. And as always, it was really fun. I loved the panel that I was sitting with. And I got delicious chocolate that was homemade by Rocco. And I also walked away with Rocco's new book that he just released, so his cookbook, which is really exciting. And I don't know, overall it was a good time. I had a lot of fun. Andrea is wonderful. Dalton Ross is wonderful. So, and the whole group that puts the show together works extremely hard and they do a fantastic job, and the fans that were there were great. We got to meet and greet afterwards and that was a lot of fun. So it was a good time. Besides the traffic was horrible. Yeah. And my GPS is ridiculous because it wants me to go through New Jersey and I don't want to go through New Jersey, but that's the way it sends me. So anyway,
There should be a setting on all GPSs, avoid New Jersey.
Oh God. Well, you know, I live in New York and I get it. They want you to go a direction that'll get you right into Manhattan, which is fine. But then it's an extra $15 to go through the tunnel. And I'm like, really?
I think you could do avoid tolls.
Nah, well, there's tolls everywhere, though. It's insane.
Oh, okay.
But anyway,
all right.
But,
well, we're going off the rails here. People are already the people who live in New Jersey are mad at me. The people, yeah. So,
I don't mind New Jersey. I really don't. It's just that I'm driving down a one way residential street, and I'm like, where on earth am I? It was very, very random. But anyway.
Well, at least you made it there, and
I did. Thank
you. Got to do that. I actually ate at Rocco's restaurant a number of years ago when I was at the Survivor finale. I think it was All Stars in New York. And Rocco at the time had a TV show on. I think it might have just been called The Restaurant. I don't remember for sure. And me and one of my assistant editors were there and we ate at his restaurant, which I pretty sure has closed since then. So that's my intersection with Rocco.
Very interesting.
My Survivor related story for today is that I will be at Run It Up Reno this week with Rob, Steven, Tyson, your friend Adam, and various other rappers. The non-Survivor part of this story is that, of course, I had my name drawn to be able to buy tickets for the National League Championship Series between the Cubs and Dodgers, but the Wrigley Field games all overlap with my time in Reno. So I'm not even going to be able to go.
Oh, that's so sad. Yeah. And for you especially, that must be really sad. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I'm sending my kids, so they'll enjoy it.
Oh, that'll be nice.
I'm hopeful for a return World Series visit, but the Dodgers are going to be tough to beat, especially if the Cubs bullpen doesn't whip itself into shape. But I still have hope, so I need to do something on this podcast that I haven't done in almost a year, and that's play this song.
They're singing, go Cubs, go! Go Cubs, go! Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win today.
So,
I was going to guess it was going to be baseball-related.
Yes, that's a good guess, but that's enough of baseball talk for now. I talked about it a lot more last year, but I think we'll calm it down to just that for now, and we'll see how this coming week goes. So instead, let's talk about something I said last week that's actually Survivor related, which was that it was interesting how much more we saw of Patrick's behavior than Simone's last week.
Yes.
And I had indicated, you know, we almost got more information that would come in handy when Patrick gets the boot. I guess that should have been a hint for us to make a different prediction for this week.
I know. We were so off. We were so off. CBS was feeding it to us and we just ignored it.
Yeah. But I also guess we now know why the Survivor producers didn't bother telling us about the pre-existing relationship between Patrick and Allie. I was a little surprised that they didn't provide that information to give some extra drama and surprise. You know, will she vote out her friend? Will she not? Mm. But I guess they figured it just wasn't worth the time to have all that backstory for this result.
Mm, that's a good point. Yeah. And it's also a situation that I feel like CBS has always been worried is going to happen. And we've never actually seen it happen. So it's an interesting way that they handled it, because they kind of took the Patrick route and ignored it, at least on TV. Whereas yeah. Allie was like, wait a second, time out. Let's talk about this. It's an interesting dynamic to have seen how it played out. And I do think that it was detrimental to his game.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Patrick ignoring it, there were actually some who still questioned whether or not Patrick recognized Allie, because she mentioned it in pregame press and he didn't. But, you know, the Twitter press conference is back.
It is. It absolutely yeah. is.
And I asked Allie that very question, and she said, of course, he knew it was her. He just thought he would get in trouble if he said anything. So he kept quiet.
Well, and I'm not surprised, because the way that the whole casting process goes along, you are very, very worried about messing anything up along the way. And I know that there were times that I was even worried to just get on an elevator, because I didn't know, was I going to have a problem because someone else was getting on the elevator and I need to wait. And there's all of these things that you don't want to end up affecting whether or not they will choose you. Now, he did say that they didn't see each other in casting, but once you're actually there ready to go and you're like waiting to go to the airport and suddenly you see someone that you know, is CBS doing it on purpose? Because you don't know what the theme is. Maybe there's 18 of you standing there with someone that was from your past and everyone's kind of freaking out and realizing in that moment. You don't know if that's what the game is going to be. So do you say anything? Do you not say anything? If you do say something, are they going to replace you because, oops, we screwed up? So I can understand entirely Patrick's reaction to it.
Yeah, I would think that something like that, bringing back people from your past, is more of a Big Brother thing to do. I hope Survivor never gets quite to that point.
Mm-hmm, that is a good point.
But you're right. I'm sure you're sitting there going, oh, my gosh. But anyway, you know, one thing that Patrick did say is when he was talking to Josh Wigler, he said he was sure Chrissy, the actual actuary, could do a calculation to tell us why he screwed up. But, you know, even I'm an engineer, and even I say you can't just use math to figure it out, because that's where rules and advice come in.
Exactly.
You know, where he went wrong may have seemed obvious as we were watching the show, because Patrick was not exactly a demure guy. But sometimes there's a deeper reason, and that's why we're here, to figure out why Patrick lost.
Yes.
So before we jump into rule one, I do want to remind listeners, if you want to read all of them and all the discussion and examples, you can do so at robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. And with that, we will go to rule number one, which surprisingly is not advice that players should jump around like wild banshees.
Yes, or self-proclaim to be a wild banshee.
Right. It's actually to scheme and plot. So how do you think Patrick did here?
He really did terrible at scheming and plotting. And I hate to even preface it like that, but there were two components that were problematic, I think, to Patrick's scheming and plotting. And that's one of the pieces of advice that you provided to people as part of this rule, is that you really need to cement relationships. And he was bad at this in two different ways, where he saw Allie as having someone he already had a cemented relationship, which became his sole focus. And then he saw Lauren as someone that he didn't really jive with and just kind of didn't care, you know, kind of tossed her to the side, like, whatever, I've got Allie. So I think in that regard, he took advantage of a relationship that he already had, and he didn't try to forge a relationship with someone that he clearly didn't click with when you still need to. So I think in that regard, he definitely was coming at the game from a very, very bad place.
And you said I was going to be the bad cop this week.
I know. I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm sorry. Listen, listen. And can we just back up for a second? Because I have to reference this. Okay. I have to talk about this just real quick. When you put yourself on national television in a game like this, people are going to judge you for everything possible. The way that you look, the way that you sound, the way that you play the game, everything you can imagine. And when I was on Survivor, before the game had even started, and it was just the beginning intro, getting to know people, videos and bios were being released. Corinne, who I love dearly, Corinne Kaplan, does her brutal cast assessment every year. And she actually said that my mother should have thrown herself down the stairs when she found out she was pregnant with me. And she said that because I was exceptionally boring. So I heard that, and obviously that's really harsh, but that's part of what we do. That's part of what you become. You just become these people that are being talked about and being judged in different ways. And I know that Corinne doesn't mean that, but she's saying it as a satire. You know, it's this is what she's doing. So you can't take all of this stuff personal. You really can't, because we are doing I'm doing what you've asked me to do, David. That is, you know, pick apart their game. And it's based on what we see. It's not based on the fact that I actually know Patrick. I don't know him personally. I didn't know Simone personally. I didn't know Katrina personally. But we're looking at what CBS has provided to us, both in their edit and also in their bios and in their get to know videos and the secret scenes and things like that. And that's what we're coming up with our assessment on. So no one should take offense to any of this. That's just my little soapbox for the day. Anyway, well, moving on,
although, you know, I'll give you examples of my own. When I was doing this for Reality News Online, and I was, you know, writing this on the web, and at the time, you know, social media didn't exist. There were only a few of us websites. So most of the Survivor players would read them, especially since Rob knew about my website. So he told the players that, you know, were with him. So on Amazon, Jenna and Heidi were just, the way they came off were just horrible, especially the way they treated Christy. And we ripped them to shreds on Reality News Online. But when I met them at the finale, you know, Jenna was fine. Now, right. She had just won $1 million. So, you know, that might have something to do with it. She was, you know, she was mock anger. And maybe there was something in there, too. But there was, you know, and then when I met Heidi, what was really funny was I took a picture with Heidi first and then I introduced myself and she got that same look of mock anger, like, oh, my God.
Yeah. That's great.
It was a good thing I took the picture first.
Right.
So anyway. Yeah. So this, you know, have that slight tangent there. But yes, I think it is important to remember that. And so we'll get back to Patrick because, you know, I said, you know, I joked, you said I was going to be the bad cop, but basically you said, you know, many of the same things I was going to say. Just to add to what you said, the first rule, I mentioned this last week, specifically says from the very beginning, you have to start making alliances and cementing relationships. And I do mean the very beginning. Now, Patrick was lucky because he got to start before the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't make full use of that, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't really talk about it. He held it in, as he told interviewers like Josh. And he said if he had realized they could have played together more without one of them going home, he would have done a better job building and supporting the relationship. And among other things, he said he didn't get to explain how much he trusted her. Now, I would change the wording there and say he didn't take the opportunity to tell her that. It's not he didn't get to. He was there with her. He just didn't do it. And also, he said he put too much trust in her and thought that there was no way she would ever vote against him.
Yeah, he really took it. He took the gift horse and kind of looked it in the mouth, you know, where the survivor gods almost smiled on him and said, hey, here's someone that you knew before the game. And it's someone that by everything we've seen, it appears they had a cordial, friendly relationship. It wasn't like they didn't like each other. And so he really could have used that to his benefit. And instead, it was just, it was almost as if he put it all on Allie, because he saw her as the person that he could utilize and that he could trust and rely on, but then left her to do all of the extra work that came with it, where he wasn't processing through the strategy of it all. He was just kind of going, oh, well, this is going to work out great. It's like the boyfriend that's not trying, you know, where he's like, we're going to be together, but I'm not going to do anything extra. And I feel like that's what Patrick was suffering from.
Yeah, he relied on her to keep him safe and without actually talking to her about it, which takes me to the important addition to the rule that we discussed in the preseason, which is that you need to check in with your allies frequently to ensure you're on the same page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look at his day after video, he afterwards seemed to realize this, as he said he should have talked to more people, you know, including Allie, on his last day to confirm his status.
And he also mentioned, too, that he didn't realize how close Devin and Ryan had become. He thought that he and Ryan were rather close, and he didn't spend much time with Devin. That, to me, is a good indicator that, again, he's kind of taking these relationships for granted. Because if he thinks Ryan and he are close and he thinks Allie and he are close, well, Devin's kind of along for the ride. That's what it seems like he was thinking, instead of really trying to also foster a relationship with Devin. So he did seem to take things for granted and didn't do that check-in, as you said, in the rule.
Right. Now, the one thing he didn't take for granted was, as you mentioned, Lauren. Maybe he took for granted he didn't need her, and basically had no relationship with her, admitted to Josh, among others, that he had no strategy talks with her until the one we saw in the water, which of course didn't exactly go very well.
Which was so uncomfortable.
Yes.
So uncomfortable.
Yeah. And, you know, in a web confessional, he admitted he didn't do a great job when he went to talk to her. He was caught off guard when she asked who he was voting for. He didn't answer, which he knew meant it was an answer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Andrea pointed it out on the show you were on, that if you want the target to think they're safe, you have to have a fake plan.
Yes.
And he didn't think that far ahead.
Why did he even go and sit with her? That's the part that blows my mind, because you do have to have that plan. If you don't have something to say to the person who you believe you're voting out, then don't go and sit in the water with them and have a one-on-one conversation. Because he gave it all away with his non-answers and the smile on his face and the way that he was just holding himself throughout that whole conversation. Lauren knew exactly what was going on. And I think that just added fuel to the fire that Lauren already had started. And she just used it to push that much harder to get Patrick out.
Right. And that's a very good transition to the second rule, because part of the second rule says, even though you may think someone would want to know, like his excuse or his reason, depending on how you look at it, was he knew she was going and everybody knew she was going. So why not just let her have some fun in her last moments? But the second rule, which of course is don't scheme and plot too much, don't backstab too soon, among other things, also talks about this situation. Yes, people may want to know that they're going. Yes, your human side may say, tell them, make them feel good. But your game side has to stop you from doing that.
Yes.
And this is exactly the reason why, because, you know, by doing that, he admitted in an interview with Josh again, he said that was pretty bad on my end. You never tell somebody they're going home. And he's right. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, this rule has several paragraphs talking about how you should not let on. It specifically says at one point, lie to their faces and then vote them off.
Yes.
There's no reason to alert them to their impending doom. It only gives them time to plot their own counterattack.
Yes.
Which is exactly what she did.
Yes.
You know, she said, I'm going to fight to stay. And she fought to stay. Now, do I know how much of that was related to what she did as opposed to the others realizing that Patrick was a problem child? I don't know. It's hard to say, but it certainly didn't help to have her going there and trying to convince them. You know, and then on another aspect of things, he had said at that previous tribal council that he trusted, quote, most of his tribe mates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we know that didn't sit well. And you may remember last week I said that a bad comment during tribal council usually won't hurt the person in that tribal council, but may come back to bite them. Well, you're a lawyer. This is Exhibit A.
It exactly is. And that's the part that I think a lot of people forget about, that this game never stops. You think that because tribal council is now over, that, okay, now it's, I guess, as a viewer, you're like, what's going to happen next week? But there's no breaks when you're actually out there playing the game. The game continues even right after tribal council. And people are not going to forget that you said those things in tribal council. And they might remember weeks later that you said those things in tribal council. So all of those comments can definitely come back and bite you. And I think what Patrick, not only did he say the wrong things, but I think Allie was realizing it. I believe in one of her confessionals, she said he just blurts things out in tribal council. And I think Allie realized that that relationship or that type of personality was going to be detrimental to her game, because they did have a relationship. And if he's just blurting things out, that's a dangerous person to play with, because they are going to say things they shouldn't say and potentially blow up your game, which is exactly what he did when he sat down with Lauren, is that he didn't say the right things. And if that's someone you're associating yourself with, that's going to be bad for Allie.
Right. And then there's another part of this rule that I feel he violated, which is something he has said a number of times since being voted out, talking about how he was too obvious in searching for the idol. In his day after video, mm-hmm. for example, he said he thought he had the numbers and felt comfortable, so he thought it was okay to look for the idol. But that was essentially being too obvious in his behavior. Even if it wasn't specifically schemey behavior, it revealed too much about where he thought he fit within the tribe.
Mm-hmm. And I think that Patrick had a very, he wasn't perceiving his behaviors correctly. I don't know if that really makes any sense. But it does.
But we'll get there. We'll get there in a couple rules.
Yeah. I mean, so,
I know exactly where you're going.
OK. All right. So we'll hold that thought.
Yes. First, let's talk about the third rule, which tells players they need to be flexible. And, you know, there are generally two types of flexibility discussed in this rule. There's strategic and there's camp life. And to my mind, Patrick had problems with both parts.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the strategic, we've actually addressed a lot of this already. The rule very clearly notes that you can't just tie yourself to one alliance. That's what he did. He presumed he was so good with Allie that he didn't need to worry about talking to someone like Lauren. He even said he didn't want to work with Lauren. Mm-hmm. He thought he had everyone else on his side. He didn't need her. So, you know, just looking at that, again, in his day after video, he noted that he had regret about not going for every angle of the game. And I think a good lesson here is that players can't ever throw anyone away.
Right.
They just have to hold on to all those possibilities. You know, you mentioned it earlier. You just never know when you might need them.
Yes. And if you've already offended them, it's going to be much more difficult for you to get them back in your corner. Now, Lauren played a very difficult game in response to Patrick's behavior, because I think for a while Lauren was holding back. She was very good at managing her emotional response to things he was saying and the way he was behaving, even though she said he was extremely aggravating and he acted like a child. I think at one point she said he's that kid that you say don't touch it and then he touches it. And which is absolutely spot on. But she was very good at recognizing not to say too much and call too much attention to the way that that was making her feel. But I think once she realized that she was on the chopping block, she tossed that aside. She's like, I don't care. I'm going to say some things that are a little outlandish, but I'm going to say them because she was fighting to stay in the game. So I think, you know, as far as Lauren is concerned and her response to what was happening with Patrick, she said some things that might come back and bite her later, but she did it in defense of where she was at in the game. I know I'm talking about Lauren, right. But you know, it's a different, it's kind of a different way that as Patrick was approaching the relationship with Lauren versus how she was approaching it.
Right. Right. Now, I also want to go back to something you said on the strategic side, which was that Patrick admitted he had no idea how close Ryan and Devin were. And, you know, in this rule, it instructs players, you need to have your finger on the pulse of every member of your tribe. It's not easy, but it will help keep you around. Usually it means you should do more listening than talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously by missing how tight they were, it shows he did not have his finger on the pulse of the tribe at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, do we really need to talk about the part that says he needs to do more listening than talking?
Yeah, no, I don't think we really do. I think everyone saw him on the show and realized that, which is so funny because in his pregame interview, he actually told Josh Wiggler that he wanted to stay off the main topic of thought. That was one of the things that he wanted to do, is keep the girls happy and stay off the main topic of thought. Really? That is not how you presented yourself at all. But that was his plan going in. He clearly didn't do that. He was on everybody's main topic of thought for the wrong reasons.
Yes, that goes to the second part of this, which deals with the personal flexibility, especially in the early game. Jeff Probst had his post-episode chat with Josh, and he basically described parts of this rule, noting that you have to be very aware of how an idea you present is being received. If everyone else is wary of that idea, you should probably back off, at least for the moment. And although Patrick wasn't necessarily presenting ideas, he was presenting himself, he had no clue how he was being received, you know, like you said.
Yes.
But also, I'm going to, you know, still put a pin in that and hold off till the fifth rule, which is when we're really going to hit on that one.
We just really want to talk about that fifth rule.
Yeah. First, we'll go ahead to the fourth rule now, which tells players not to let their emotions control them. And, you know, my thought here is that while Patrick was a wild banshee, which, again, we'll discuss more in a moment, the rule four problem comes when he refused to listen to advice.
Yes.
Specifically, Allie told him, calm down. But Patrick, you know, also told Mike Bloom for his Parade.com interview that he thought it was better to be himself and that by doing so, he was more likely to make friends and build relationships. And, you know, usually on Survivor, it's a good idea to be yourself. It's hard to be somebody else for that long a time. But sometimes you need to be a much more toned down version of yourself. And I would say for Patrick, this was definitely one of those times. If he had been thinking about it strategically instead of emotionally, I would say he might have realized that.
Yes. And this actually reminds me, the relationship between he and Allie, I know I described them once as, you know, people that were dating, but it's also very similar to like a brother-sister type relationship. And I see this a lot in my children where my daughter, who is older than my son, will try to politely remind him how his behavior might be being viewed by others in the room and that he needs to take it down a few notches because my son is a little, he's busy. You know, he's one of those kids. He's very excitable. And, you know, my daughter will try to just be like, Owen, keep in mind where we are and what we're doing and how you should be acting at the moment. And Owen is almost, he almost gets insulted because he wants to be able to be himself without realizing being yourself, even though that's a great thing in the moment right now, it's just not appropriate. And that's really, you know, what Patrick was continuing to do, where he thought that being Patrick was going to make him likable, but actually being Patrick was making him not likable. And he never realized that about himself because it was negatively affecting the game that he could actually play with these people. So it's definitely something that he should have recognized about himself, but he absolutely failed to do so.
Right. And that does finally take us perfectly to the fifth rule, which tells players they need to pretend to be nice and play the social game. I would say, in general, Patrick seemed to be a nice enough guy most of the time. But, you know, call me the bad cop here. He may have had one of the worst social games ever by a person who thought he was doing great at the social game.
Wow. Yeah, I'm going to say you're the bad cop there.
I mean, well, what I'm
but
saying is,
it makes, you know, sense.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people who realize in the moment, oh, I am not getting along with these people. But Patrick thought he was doing a great job.
Yes.
And that's, you know, where he definitely was not. And if you look back at what Jeff Probst said before the season began, he was talking about and worried about Patrick's social game, saying that he might annoy people, almost like if you're in prison and you find someone who is happy.
Oh, that's so horrible.
Yeah.
That's but, so terrible. You know,
he now thinks that Patrick tried too hard to be the funny guy and the center of attention, which is a risky role in this game. And I think Jeff was spot on here.
Yes. And I do think that, I don't know if anyone else noticed this, but it was very interesting when you would watch Patrick interact on the show and even like in the pregame interviews. When I first started listening to Patrick, when he was speaking to Josh Wiggler, I thought, this guy's going to be kind of, I hate to say boring because that's what a lot of people said about me, but you know, well, look what I am I boring? I don't know. But regardless, but he almost, it was almost like he turns robotic when he's talking to Jeff. His whole demeanor changes. His tone even changes. The way that he speaks to Jeff changes. And it's very interesting because he loses that fun side of him and becomes extremely serious. And every time the very few times you actually saw him interacting with Jeff, but it just struck me as very, very different than the person that we see playing the game. Whereas someone like Ryan, when they're interacting with Jeff, Ryan sounds the same way when he's interacting with anybody on his tribe. And if you're someone who's actually playing the game with Patrick, I feel like that would jump out at you, that it's almost like when he's with us, he's one way, but when he's with people who are figures of authority, he's different. And I don't know if it was just because he's on TV and he's not sure how to interact with Jeff. I don't know. But it was just an interesting thing I noticed about the way that he presented himself, depending upon who was in his audience. And when he was with his tribe, it was like he was trying to entertain them. But when he was with Jeff, he was trying to actually take things serious and process information and really think things through.
Yeah. And, you know, he could have used a little bit more of that with his tribe, I think, because, you know, going back to what Simone said last week in interviews, Patrick was super crazy with his tribe, not even just what we saw on TV, like yelling at the crab and stuff like that. She talked about how he would get up in the middle of the night yelling and waking everybody up. You know, on Survivor, certainly you know this better than I do, sleep is precious.
Yes.
And I'd say he's lucky he wasn't killed by his tribe mates at that point.
He did say that that didn't happen. He said that Simone was crazy. That didn't happen. But well, who knows if it did or did not happen. Yeah. But I do have to say that, yes, when you are actually sleeping out there and you're already uncomfortable because where you're sleeping and the conditions you're sleeping in, the last thing you want is somebody pretending it's time to get up and it's not. So that's definitely, yeah. I could see why that would be incredibly frustrating for anybody out there. And I can't imagine how Lauren handled that situation, because obviously Lauren was not a big fan of Patrick. So that would be interesting to hear about from Lauren's perspective.
Right. And, you know, maybe we'll find out from the next person voted out of that tribe or that original tribe, you know, whether or not, I guess we'll have a deciding vote as to whether or not that actually happened. But, you know, you mentioned Lauren and, you know, that was another thing. He was bickering with Lauren. He was, according to Simone again, telling Ryan to make him laugh like he's a court jester or something, mm-hmm. you know, just all these weird things. Again, according to Simone, if Patrick's denying at least some of it. You know, it just came down to even what we saw on TV when I was live tweeting it. I described it as a monkey high on cocaine is calmer than Patrick.
I'm sorry, but that's really, listen. Okay. You're winning this week. Okay. From that. Yeah. That's great. That's great.
But he apparently didn't realize it. He, like we discussed, he thought he could make Lauren feel more comfortable by talking to her. And in general, he believed that he comforts people and makes them feel better. And you know what? Maybe that's true in real life. It might be. And I hope it is. But it sure wasn't the case on Survivor. He just didn't seem, like you said, he didn't have a good sense of himself and how he was acting.
Listen, he brought a shoebox as a carry-on, okay? I'm sorry, but if you are trying to make an impression on people who you've never met before, and you're going to be playing this game with them and your carry-on is a shoebox, guess what? You're starting off in a really, really strange place. Very strange.
Well, he is a mover. He uses boxes, you know.
A shoebox, really? Come on.
It maybe it was fragile and it was small. I don't know. I got nothing there. Now, in some ways, Patrick does seem to get it now. In his day after video, he said he regrets being in the light and standing out too much and wishes he had let someone else be in the light. But on the other hand, he told Mike Bloom that Ali should be ashamed for voting him off because they could have worked really well together. He said, I know I was loud and people noticed me, but that was a reason for her to take me along, knowing I would be a target and not her. Now, he may be partially right about being a target, but I feel like he was just too big a target and she might have been hit in the crossfire. You know, I think she realized, you mentioned it earlier, that she had to get rid of him before he became a problem for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after she tried to teach him Survivor 101. I guess maybe they should have taken that course in college together.
Right. That would have been fun. And it is one of those things that I feel like people forget to recognize, that when you are a group of two in that game, that even though you might say, oh, well, if I work with that person will be the target and keep the target off of me. But once people start to realize that you're working together, they might switch, because they might look at Patrick and Allie and go, well, Patrick and Allie have this relationship. They've been working together. But Allie's really strategic and she's using Patrick to further her own game. We have to get rid of Allie. Yeah, it can absolutely work against Allie if people start recognizing the type of gameplay that Patrick has, if they think it's going to benefit themselves. And clearly, nobody saw that gameplay benefiting themselves, because you have people like Allie and Ryan who are playing, I think, a great strategic game and really kind of processing through all of their potential paths that they could take. And Patrick wasn't someone they wanted to take down that path. So I think that Ryan spent some time really thinking about that as well. Is Patrick someone that will help further my game? I think Allie did the same thing and they both came up with the same result. So it can work for you to be someone who is more targeted than the person next to you, but it can also so badly affect that other person's game, depending upon what type of target you're putting on yourself. If you're a meat shield, that's one thing. But if you're a crazy, as you said, cocaine monkey, that's a whole different world. That's a whole different world.
Yeah. And we've seen it before where, okay, there's a duo. One of them is the big, loud one who you'd think might be the target, but then the other one is the smarter, more strategic one. And yeah, people get together and they say, well, okay, we can always get the loud one later.
Exactly.
Let's get the strategic one now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Allie had great foresight to look ahead and see that that was a possible outcome and say, okay, I'm going to have to separate myself now.
Now, I have to reference one thing here, because I'm concerned for Allie. And I don't know if this actually happened or not, but it will be fascinating to see. In one of his interviews, I think it was with She Knows, he talked about how after the swap, Allie told everybody that she had known Patrick, which if that actually happened, Allie told the rest of our group once the tribe swap happened, she let everybody know, which I don't know if that was the best idea for Allie. So I'm very curious to see if that actually did happen, because I think if that happened, that's a real bad move for Allie. Real bad move.
Yeah, and I'm kind of surprised CBS let him say that in an interview. Because
I was too.
Yeah, that's the same thing that got an unnamed player on a previous season in trouble on Twitter for responding to a question I had asked, which was something that happened, you know, 30 seconds into the next episode, and he didn't think it was a big deal. So by saying something that happened afterwards, but then again, he wasn't there. So we don't know if that's true or not.
Right. And that's why I thought it was strange.
We'll just have to see.
Because in that interview, he also talked about their relationship as being close friends. Whereas every other interview, he says they were associates and they weren't that close. But in this one, he specifically says, I was close friends with her. And then they go on and ask him about keeping it a secret from the other castaways. And that's where he reveals that Allie shared it after he was gone. So if that does happen, that would be, I mean, I don't know if they would even show that, because obviously CBS hasn't included that up to this point. that they did know each other, but maybe that's how they will reveal it, or maybe they won't. I don't know, but I thought that that wouldn't bode well, I think, for Allie.
Yeah, I suspect you're right that they're not even going to show it at this point, that he's gone, all memory of him is gone, moving along.
Right.
So one thing we were just talking about was, you know, the possible threat that it would pose to Allie if he went along. And, well, you know, Rule 6 warns players not to be too much of a threat. Now, he wasn't a threat in a typical sense, but as we've already discussed, he was so erratic and the tribe couldn't control him. So in a swap or a merge, both of those are huge red flags. And they, you know, a lot of the people on this tribe are definitely forward looking. As it turns out, they're not going to have to look very far forward. But, you know, they saw, OK, this could be a problem. It could threaten their future games. And that, of course, especially included Allie, who we just, you know, spent 5 or 10 minutes talking about there.
You know, I do feel like this was going to be a lot about Allie. I was struggling so much working through all of this because it's so much about Allie. I know it's about Patrick, but it is so much about Allie.
Well, hopefully it won't be like, you know, last week where we were saying it was so much about Patrick, you know, that we saw, and then it turned out Patrick left.
Oh,
so hopefully
I know.
That won't be the case. But we'll deal with that when we get. Yeah, we'll deal with that with our predictions. 7th rule talks about how to get and use idols and advantages. And man, Patrick could have used some advice here. But, you know, we already discussed how he was so obvious in searching for the idol. And, you know, yes, my advice is search for an idol, but you have to know what the tribe thinks about it. Some are fine with it. Others think it's too sneaky. In this case, I think it could only have been seen as a negative because of the way he went about it.
Yeah, when you are that obvious about it, it's one of those things that I feel like everyone knows that everybody is really looking for an idol, but nobody wants to admit that they're actually looking for an idol. So it's this weird like game that you play while you're out there. And that's why everybody's like, oh, I'm going to go look for firewood. I'm going to look for coconuts. You know, there's always some other excuse why you're leaving, because everyone is always very suspect when you do. And Patrick didn't even care. He was like, I'm going to look in this tree while you're standing there watching me, because why not?
Yeah.
Which that's almost like, I don't know. It's not like you're rubbing it in their face, but you really are kind of, you're bucking the system where you're like, oh, whatever. I don't care if you see me looking for an idol, because you know what? You and I, we're good. So it doesn't matter. And that's shining a light on those people you're playing a game with, because someone else like Lauren might be thinking, why doesn't he care that Devin and Allie are watching him look for an idol? Well, it's because they're working together, you know? And so I just feel like you're not putting yourself in a good place at all if you're doing it in front of other people.
Right. Absolutely. All right. So now we move on to Appendix A. And for a third straight week, now that Rob isn't around for me to rub it in his face the way he rubbed it in mine last season, the former Rule 7 comes into play. You know, we're only in the third episode, so tribes should still be voting out the week. And as this former Rule, now Appendix, notes, there are two types of weak players here. Those who hurt the tribe's chances and challenges, and those who cause divisions within the tribe and weaken the group dynamic. Mm. I think Patrick hits both marks. We've already gone over how he caused problems in the tribe with his behavior. Quite a bit of what we've just talked about was that. So I don't think we need to rehash all of that. But what do you think of me saying he was weak in the challenge department?
I think he proved it this week, unfortunately, that he couldn't bring to the challenge what he needed to bring to the challenge. It's not just about your physicality and your ability to actually carry out the task that you have been kind of assigned to do. It's also recognizing when you can no longer do it and accepting that your tribe will be okay with you stepping back and letting someone else jump in. He didn't recognize that. And when you are doing some of these challenges, regardless of how physically strong you might be, you're not eating, you're not sleeping, you're dehydrated. There's all of these added components. And if you can't recognize that from those things, I'm not going to be at my best. So when I'm tired, I've got to switch out. That's going to be fine, because look at how many times the other tribe switched out. So I feel like his downfall was, yes, he was doing fine at the beginning of the challenge, knocking the blocks off. So if he had just stepped back at that moment and said, okay, I want someone to sub in for me, I don't think we'd be talking about Patrick doing bad in the challenge because nobody would have seen the end component of that. It would have been the beginning. He was doing fine. He was on par with the other people throwing the sandbags. But then at the end was when it really became, I mean, it started to drag on. I mean, my husband was like, I can't even watch this anymore. Like it was, you know, it was just getting bad. But that's when you really have to step back. And he didn't do that.
Right, right. And, you know, first of all, he volunteered to be the thrower. So that was the first step, which, of course, you can be the hero or the goat. Mm. We won't go any further into goats.
We'll avoid goats.
Last week, we talked about how it's risky to put yourself out there as the puzzle person. But I think it can be almost as bad whenever you take on a single task like this. And then, like you said, he didn't hand it off.
Mm-hmm.
On the Survivor fan forum with you, Dalton pointed out that if you pass off the throw, it's not all on you. If you keep it yourself, it is.
Right.
And he kept it himself. And, you know, he admitted that he saw other people passing off the throw, but he claimed that he didn't hear them, which I can understand in the heat of the moment. Maybe he didn't, but he still saw other people doing it. He should have taken the initiative. My arm is getting tired. Something like that. And I think part of it probably was, you know, there's been a lot of talk this week about Lauren's perceived bias against redheads and what she said there. But, you know, we have to also look, I think, at what Patrick said, which was he took one look at Lauren and was like, well, there's no way she's going to be able to do this. Well, you don't know that. You can't judge her that way.
Right.
Just like we shouldn't say, OK, all redheads are untrustworthy. You can't say, well, this older, and I put that in big quotes, this older woman, she can't throw. Well, he doesn't know. And right. She claimed she could. He's got to give her that opportunity.
Exactly. And if he had given her that opportunity, and let's say she would have been horrible at it, maybe, I don't know. But let's say she was, that she ended up screwing it up, then the light's on her. You know, that she's the one that ended up causing them to lose the challenge as opposed to Patrick. So I think that would have been a benefit to him if he had started to recognize, I can't do this anymore, and switched. Because then possibly it would have been on Lauren. But then also possibly Lauren could have won it for them. So it is a kind of a catch-22, but you have to recognize that about yourself when you're actually in the middle of those challenges.
Yeah, but if Lauren wins it for them, he doesn't have to go to tribal council. So,
and that's true, too. That is absolutely true. Yep.
So, you know, it wasn't just this one challenge. I was trying to remember back. I don't recall him being a particular challenge superstar in any of the challenges. I don't know that he was terrible, but he wasn't like a Devin who was just going to, you know, take control of everything and do all the swimming activities, for example.
Right.
I think Patrick was just kind of there.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So, I think that Patrick's the way that you perceive Patrick by how he looks, there's this idea that he's going to be really good in the challenges, but he didn't present himself, I think, as really good in the challenges. He's not so small, you know, he's one of the larger guys.
Right. So then after all is said and done, we saw the person who caused the loss apologizing when they got back to camp after the challenge. Now, last week, you took a pretty strong position that players should never do this.
Yes.
You stand by that for Patrick when it was obvious he was at fault?
I do. I still stand by it because, again, you are, even though he was the only one doing it, it's fine to say, I don't know, I kind of go back and forth. I mean, I guess if you're the only one and you're not in a team, it's not a group effort, maybe apologizing is fine because everyone saw it and it was just you. But it is also, it's a tricky thing to do because then you are, I think you recognize it and you move on. You're like, hey guys, I'm sorry about that. I should have switched out and maybe move on. But, and I don't think he really spent too much time apologizing for what he did, but it is one of those situations where you're helping the team recognize something about you when you start to apologize for it. I don't know if that makes sense, but if you're in a group, it does. I think in a group of people, apologizing is a really bad idea because then you're taking the onus of it for that group. When you're by yourself, apologizing, I think, might be recognized as a good thing because clearly you're not hiding behind anyone and it is just you. So you are recognizing that maybe I screwed up. Sorry, guys, but I wouldn't spend too much time on it.
All right. So we have reached the end here. Before I sum up my conclusions, do you have any final thoughts about Patrick?
Oh, Patrick. I didn't expect Patrick to play the game that he played. I really didn't. When I saw his pregame or listened to his pregame interviews and saw the manner in which he was presenting himself and how he wanted to play this game, I really didn't think that Patrick was going to play the game that we all saw. I didn't perceive him to be a goofball. I didn't perceive him to be someone that is that would act in the fashion that we saw. But when you look at the pregame interviews of the other players, a lot of what they said was very telling about Patrick. And, you know, about him smiling all the time. That I think Ashley said she wanted to kick him in the face or something along those lines. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Yes, it was. I sort of want to slap his face is what she said. Ben, he's got a weird smile, and it's there was a lot of things about the way in which he's a class clown. He's trying to stir things up. I think he and Cole wanted to create a ruckus. So it was very interesting because everything that people said about him represented the Patrick that we saw. But I feel like everything that Patrick presented to us before the game was not what we ended up seeing. So it was, you know, I feel for Patrick that, you know, he had an idea going out there, but it wasn't who Patrick really was. And maybe he was struggling with his own identity before the game started. I'm not sure. But clearly there was some issues there with Patrick.
Okay. So to wrap up on my end, last week I said that Simone started the game with two disadvantages. On the flip side, this week, Patrick started with a pretty huge advantage, which was, of course, his previous relationship with Allie. But he failed to make use of that advantage and instead became a liability to her. Patrick said in both his CBS interview and Day After video that he thinks he was voted out because he brought too much attention to himself, whether because he was the only person throwing beanbags at the challenge, being too loud, or idol hunting. And he's partially right. But from a strategic standpoint, Patrick relied too much on Allie and not enough on actually doing the necessary strategic work himself. But he didn't listen to her when she tried to give him a short course in Survivor 101. He thought he was in a great position, but didn't make sure that was actually the case. On top of that, he made things worse by revealing too much information to the person he never had a relationship with, allowing her to fight for her life and try to convince people to keep her after Patrick had spent 9 days annoying those very same people to the point that they believed keeping him around would be detrimental to their own games. If Patrick had played harder on the strategic side and softer on the social side, he might have made it further in the game. But by doing the opposite, we can see why Patrick lost.
I think you should actually quote Patrick here as well. Because there is one thing that he said in his pregame interviews about so many times people are blindsided and they're taken out of the game and they're heated. The last thing I want to do is go into tribal council and think I'm ready to go. And then I get cut off from the feet and I'm sitting there going, wow, this just happened to me. And that's exactly what we saw.
He
actually said that. And it's, yeah. So that's poor Patrick. Because it was almost like internally he knew that this was going to be an issue for him. And then that's exactly what we watched. We saw it on his face. As soon as that second Patrick vote came up, that smile, that disappeared. So that was a very hard moment, I think, for Patrick.
Yes. All right. So we put Patrick in the rearview mirror and look ahead here. And once again, we don't have much to go on for our predictions. I think, if anything, we have less than usual because it's a swap.
Yes.
So not only do we have no idea where people will go, we don't really even know if they'll stay in three tribes or drop to two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from watching the preview, I think I saw that the next challenge was set up for three tribes.
Ooh.
So I think we'll see three tribes of five. I might have misseen it, and, you know, who knows? I would not put it past the producers to throw us a curveball and set it up for three, but then say, oh, we're only running two.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, so if they keep it in three tribes of five, it means it's pretty likely that you know, whichever tribe loses, they'll have one person on the tribe who doesn't have a cohort from the original tribe. So it's probably going to be a 2-2-1 or a 3-1-1. It's less likely to be a 3-2 situation.
Mm-hmm.
If it is a situation of a single person there, that one person could be one of two things. They could be an easy target, or they could be a swing vote. You know, if it's a 3-1-1, one of those singles could be easy target. If it's a 2-2-1, well, okay, who wants to grab that one? Now, the ad that I saw, the preview ad, claims there will be a surprise at tribal council. Now, they almost always claim that, but I'm going to say it's going to be a swing vote. And so that, okay, so now we've got the general situation, but it doesn't really help me in picking a specific person. With that in mind, I'm going to pick a person who has seemingly had some problems blending in with her tribe. And, you know, maybe she would be perceived as being weaker in the challenges, much like Patrick perceived her as being weak. So that's right. I'm going to pick Lauren, although it is really just a wild guess. Yeah.
That's interesting. See, this is what I feel like I'm going to do this week. I was just processing everything before the show and kind of going through notes. And then I was like, I have to come up with a prediction. And a name literally just popped in my head. And I was like, well, that's interesting. I don't know why it did, but it did. It just popped in my head. And it was Desi.
No.
I know. I know you don't want to hear that. I know you don't want to hear Desi. But here's my thought. And I don't know if it's going to mean anything or not, but there is always that one person that gets screwed with the swap. It just happens. You know, that somebody ends up on the wrong side of the numbers. And I feel like Desi's pre-game interviews, and not what she said, but what everybody else said about her, was that she's going to be someone who's going to have to be reckoned with. Like, she's going to be a good player. She appears strong. She appears smart. She appears friendly. She appears likable. Everybody wanted to get to know Desi. And so I feel like if she's on the wrong side of the swap, that she's potentially going to have some trouble convincing them to keep her around, as opposed to, I could be a swing vote and I can help you. I don't know. That was the name that came to my head. I don't know why, but I felt like if I don't go with it, and then it was actually, if it is Desi, I'm going to kick myself. So I'm saying it, Desi.
Well, I am rooting against you so hard right now.
I know you are. I know. It just, that was the name that came to my head. I just feel like when it comes to a swap, if you don't blend in, then your chances of being a swing vote, I think, are decreased exponentially. And I think Lauren, she could have the ability to blend in and sell herself as a swing vote, because she might say point blank, I'm not tied to these people. Trust me. Like, if you want them out, I'm out, you know, like, or I'll go with you. Like, I'll do it. Like, I feel like she would be someone who could sell herself good as a swing vote.
See, I was thinking more that Lauren might end up as one of the duos. So it would be her and someone from her tribe, two people from another tribe, and a swing vote. And that they would target Lauren.
And I could get that entirely, but I feel like I don't know. I feel like Lauren would be someone who is more willing to work with other individuals, because you look at the individuals that she's in her tribe with right now. Everyone keeps calling her the older woman, even though she's younger than I am. And I don't think I'm old.
Well, I hope not, because I'm older than you are.
Right. So I feel like if she ends up with people that are like Ben, she might jive with Ben really well, because Ben seems kind of salt of the earth, work really hard kind of guy. Lauren might mesh with that really well. Yeah. So I think she's got a chance of actually doing well with other people. But anyway, that was my, okay. Her name literally popped in my head. So that's what we're doing. And I love Desi. Well, I think she's great.
Yeah. I'm hoping you didn't have a vision there. So
wouldn't that be amazing? All right. You heard it here first. No. I had a vision.
No, it would not be amazing if it's her.
I know, that would be so sad.
Yeah.
But incredible.
All right. So we need to come up with a hashtag. Now, my original hashtag I was thinking of was Survivor 101. Mm. But I think we had a couple other ones that might be better than that. And I don't think Cocaine Monkey would be a good one to use.
I think that would be really interesting to just search there and see if there's any Cocaine Monkey out there.
Yeah. Maybe High Monkey, or if you have anything.
Well, this is interesting. In his Josh Wigler interview, he gave himself the hashtag, which I was thinking we should use. I'm like, I think we should go with Patrick's own hashtag because it seems so appropriate. His hashtag was too much sauce. So I was like, you know what? That sounds like Patrick actually recognized something in himself there. But there's also a lot of too much sauce already out on Twitter. I looked it up and there just seems to be, it's a football thing. I don't know. There seems to be a lot of too much sauce. But you said something during the podcast, which I thought might be more appropriate. And that's red flags.
Ah,
you know, I mean, he's talking about him with the red hair and how he was all red because he was sunburned. And then, you know, his gameplay, red flags. That would be my hashtag.
All right. Hashtag red flags. And of course, there's the hashtag for this podcast overall, which is hashtag YXLost. And of course, for Rob Has a Podcast, it's hashtag RHAP. Make sure listeners, make sure you subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts by going to robhasapodcast.com/survivor or signing up for them in your podcatcher. We are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed. In both places, you can find all the great RHAP content like the Survivor Know-It-Alls, the Wiggle Room, the RHAP B&B with Mike Bloom and Liana Boris. And much more. Recap show, voicemail, you name it. Also, be sure to check out the various blogs at robhasawebsite.com/blog. This week, former Reality News Online writer Sarah Channon returns with a blog debating whether or not Ryan should be compared to Cochran.
Ah, that was good. I like that.
You can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89. And I'm at David Bloomberg. As I mentioned, you can also follow me on Snapchat. A few of you did, and you have seen I have not been that active. I'm much more active on Twitter, but hey, you never know when I might start getting active. Thanks again to Will from America for the theme song. Thanks to you, Jessica, for another great episode.
Well, thanks to you, David Bloomberg. This was absolutely fun. I appreciate the fact that you came out swinging with some of your bad cop analogies. So I appreciate that. Maybe I won't cause any Twitter wars this week, but you never know.
Okay.
Check me out and
Let's
see if I
not.
Do. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And any listeners who are in Reno, come say hello to me. Everybody else, I'll see you back here a week from now. Bye. David Bloomberg will turn it around. He'll break down the rules and he'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. This is why blank lost.